Marini's Media.
How was that for a kickoff? Apple stopping play at Fleetwood, banners over Barrow, the Smiths reforming at Swindon. I want some football too. This is the Totally Football League Show in association with Paddy Power. Howdy gang, Matt Davis Adams here to guide you through the EFL's opening weekend in the company of the tactical analyst, internet darling and one-time winger Adrian Clark. Morning, Clarky.
Good morning. Internet darling. No one's ever called me that before.
Yeah, I was going to go with housewife's favourite, but that feels like a bit sort of 80s. So yeah, that's what we're going with.
That's a bit of a stretch as well, to be fair. But yeah, I'll take internet darling. It's good.
TV heartthrob and Swindon Town Hall of Famer Sam Parkin is also in. Hi, Sam.
That's spot on. I've got no complaints there. Perfect.
And returning for her long overdue sophomore appearance on the pod, you'll have heard her across the British Broadcasting Corporation's footballing output, from match of the day to final score to the WSL, wearer of many hats, but never happier than when sporting an Oxford United one. Hello, Robin Cowan.
Oh, thanks for having me back, Matt.
It is our pleasure. Before we get busy reviewing games, it's time for Paddy Power's Performance of the Weekend. It's basically a device which allows the show's principal sponsor to get an elongated mention under the guise of a feature praising noteworthy performances from football teams. Each episode, we'll nominate the side we think has excelled in the EFL and make a case as to why they should be our weekly winner. We then leave it to you, dear listener, to decide who is right. You've got 15 seconds, guys, to tell us your team and why they should win. If you go over that time, you will know. Adrian, I'm going to let you start first. You have picked Reading. Tell us why.
Well, Veljko Paunovic comes out of quarantine and delivers the perfect away performance. Super organised at the back. In central midfield, brilliant. Laurent comes in from Shrewsbury alongside Rinamota. Brilliant. Lucas Yao, unplayable up to... Blimey, that went a bit fast. I didn't even get to Ajaria and his goal, but there you go. Good performance.
It's a big old bong, that. Robin, you've gone for Accrington. Tell us why.
Two of the best goals you'll see all weekend, Dion Charles and Tarik Owakwe, the kind that make noises coming out of your mouth. Beating aside one of the favourites for promotion in Peterborough, fielded £3 million worth of players in the front line alone, and any team to throw the so-called Project Vengeance into...
Closer than Clarkey, I think, that one. Sam, let's see if you can hit the mark with Sheffield Wednesday.
Excellent all-round performance, unlike Sheffield Wednesday. Brilliant at the back, two strikers scored, points penalty, don't worry about that. Siege mentality, Accrington scored two flukes, and Reading were playing against a team without any strikers. And white players, so it was good.
If only you hadn't started with an erm and thrown in a fleek, you'd have probably hit it bang on then. Best so far. I'm going for Harrogate Town. Easy one, this. First ever EFL game against a team who were two divisions higher than them last season in Southend. They made the Shrimpers look like prize prawns. Barely a month since Harrogate won promotion, they scored more goals than anyone else in League Two this weekend. And that's what they have won. Good. Right. We'll get better at that as the season goes on, probably.
You did tell us it was going to be 30 seconds. I was only halfway through.
Well, initially Abby said it's going to be 30 seconds. Then she said it's going to be 20 seconds. And then at the last minute, she changed it to 15. So that was sneaky from the producer. But I think we did quite well anyway.
I didn't realise you were coming in, Matt, because I would have said Harrogate were playing against a youth team as well. So there you go.
Ouch. We'll get to our weekend review shortly. First, I wanted to have a brief chat about a story which David Ornstein's written in his Monday column for The Athletic this week. I'm quoting David in the piece here. He writes, "Last week it was reported that an EFL request to be allocated Fulham's outstanding parachute payments had been rejected following their promotion back to the Premier League. The Athletic understands the same has occurred with West Brom, who were due to receive a third and final payment of £15 million, having been relegated in 2018. So basically, instead of Fulham and Albion getting those parachute payments, which they're no longer entitled to, given that they're back in the top flight, the money goes back to the Premier League. I'm going to give this one to you first of all, Adrian. You've been outspoken on the need for the Premier League to help the EFL out. Do you think that this would have been a good way for them to do it?
I think it would have been the perfect way for them to help out. It would have been the right gesture. it's very selfish of them to take it back. But having said that, Premier League clubs are down an awful lot of money, what with the China TV agreement being cancelled and various other issues. So I get their predicament, but the EFL is in desperate need for funds. And this wouldn't have hurt the Premier League. They weren't expecting to have that money back. It would have been the right gesture, in my opinion, to spread it out among the 72 clubs, because it will make a big difference to them.
Robin, it would have been quite an easy PR win for the Premier League, this, wouldn't it?
That's exactly what I was thinking. Very easy. And it just feels like, you know, there's been so much chat about how certain teams are going to survive, and this really would have been a nice big tick in the old Premier League box, and it wouldn't have been that difficult, would it?
Sam, do you think that the Premier League should be obligated to help the EFL out, or is it not really up to them to be saving clubs of the 72?
No, I think they should be. And I think we should have learnt lessons from, obviously, what happened to Bury. And you think of some of the superpowers that neighbour them. I felt something could have been done maybe out of just kindness, really, at that point as well. And it's so interesting going into these fixtures. And yes, we're excited about new players and the prospects of teams' chances. But a lot of the build-up was dominated by clubs that are down on numbers in their squads or struggling to pay X amount for players. So I think further down, Clarkie touched on it, further down the EFL, there are clubs that have been really hindered by coronavirus and by the lack of supporters allowed in the ground. So, of course, it would have been the perfect moment for some solidarity from above.
And remember, guys, barring about 7-8 clubs in the Premier League, they're all capable of getting relegated. You know, there's every chance that a number of these Premier League clubs will be in the EFL in the coming years. So it's a little bit short-sighted and obviously selfish at this moment in time.
All right, actual football's much more fun to talk about. Let's do that with specific regard to the Championship next.
For the rest of this month being September 2020, you can take out a subscription to The Athletic for the frankly ridiculous price of just £1 a month. That's unrivaled football writing and analysis from the very best people in the business, a brand spanking new breaking news service, and ad-free versions of each Athletic podcast, all for just £1 a month. Go to theathletic.com/leagueshow to get started.
You're listening to the Totally Football League Show, sponsored by Paddy Power and part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Headlines from the opening weekend at the EFL's top table include all three relegated sides, Bournemouth, Watford and Norwich, picking up W's on their return to the Championship. Meanwhile, an injury time winner gives Rotherham the points against the Chair Boys in the Battle of the New Boys. Speaking of points, Wednesday cut their deficit by 3, just -9 for them now. In the Sam v Matt, that's me, derby, QPR versus Forest, it was a surprise to see Forest lose. Stylish Sabri quickly going out of fashion, according to reports in The Athletic on Monday. And Aitor Karanka, Veljko Paunovic and Dean Holden, brackets sort of, close brackets, celebrate opening day successes with their new clubs. New manager bounce or what? We picked a few key results. First up, Birmingham 1, Brentford 0. This was Saturday's early kickoff. Birmingham won the battle of the bees against the bees. We'll get to Brentford, but we ought to start off with the team that won. Birmingham ahead by the break, thanks to a header from Jeremy Bella, past the stand-in keeper. Bella tweeting, great way to start the season. Plus emoji, number 3 emoji, football emoji, flames emoji, hashtag KRO, hashtag JB11 at BCFC. Clarkie, you were worried for Karanka on our preview show last week after that cup defeat at home to Cambridge. Presumably you preferred what you saw from Aitor and co here.
Oh, it's much more like it, wasn't it? Yeah, no, it's a really, really good performance. Lovely balance to the team. So maybe we can just put that opener to one side. I still think there are issues at Birmingham, but Karanka is a pretty safe pair of hands at Championship level. He had players in the right positions. You look at the back four, it's very settled. And in midfield, I thought that they looked strong with Clayton alongside Sundjic. And the wingers contributed, one with an assist, one with a goal. So, no, really, really good start. Seemed like a good spirit to the team as well. And the story of the game is obviously the fact that despite signing two goalkeepers, Karanka opted to play a teenage rookie, Zach Gcock, who had a blinder. So it'd be fascinating to see whether he keeps the shirt for the next game.
Yeah, Neil Etheridge signed just a couple of days before the game. Karanka saying that he will come in, but Gcock certainly did his cause no harm at all. Speaking of keepers, Sam, no David Rea for Brentford, I noticed. Does that mean that he's going to be departing soon? And if so, where do you think he's going to end up?
I'm not sure. I think there was rumours of Arsenal, Aston Villa as well. So you may be another Brentford player who's going to go up the M40 and join Dean Smith at Aston Villa. So, yeah, it is a concern for Brentford, these players all leaving. I think we just have to take a bit of a breath. It's no need for panic. I think there was enough in the performance in the second half, plenty of chances. But I do worry about them in that type of game. That's three on the spin now, if you include the Swansea defeat in the playoffs that they've lost by a goal to nil. And they seem to have that in their armoury. I don't know what it is. A little bit of a soft underbelly, maybe. But, you know, with that, we just need to wait and see how much of the Watkins money they reinvest, possible Benrahma money as well, and what type of signings they're going to bring in. Because with Canos and Marcondes, I'm quite strong on this. I don't think they bring the goals and the assists, of course, not to replicate what happened last year. But I think they're squad players, those two. And with the introduction of Force and Fosse from the bench as well on Saturday, I think there's going to be a great necessity to bring some top quality in those positions if they're going to avoid the playoffs again.
Interesting, isn't it, Robin? Because Brentford have been widely praised in recent years for everything they've done on and off the pitch, essentially. But Sam's right, the recruitment's going to be absolutely key for them to kind of get over last season's hangover and make sure that they're up there again this time round.
Absolutely. But as you say, it's everyone's so confident that Brentford will get it right because they have done year after year, transfer window after transfer window. But they're obviously losing a lot of goals potentially. They've obviously lost Wally Watkins and side Benrahma. He is going to go, it sounds like. The good thing is, I suppose they do have it's another month, I think, till the transfer window closes. So I'm sure they have something up their sleeve. But that's a big turnover. Goalkeeper's obviously fantastic as well. So he'll be a big loss. Just interesting to me on this actual game, this was the exact same game that opened last season, apart from it was in at Griffin Park, and it was the exact same scoreline. Although I think I remember last season that was Birmingham's only shot on target and it went in. So this was slightly more dominant from Birmingham, which is quite interesting. This just seems like it's, I don't know, a Brentford the most predictable team in the Championship? Is it all going to happen over and over again? That they create so many chances and then occasionally they have these games where they just can't take them.
Yeah, we'll see if they can get back on the horse. They go to Southampton in the EFL Cup in midweek and then they host Huddersfield at the weekend. Birmingham away at Swansea on Saturday. Elsewhere, goals aplenty by the seaside. Bournemouth 3, Blackburn 2. Jack Stacey putting Bournemouth ahead. Bradley Johnson equalising. Jefferson Lerma restoring the Cherries' lead, but Blackburn weren't done. Adam Armstrong pulled one back, only for Arnaud Danjuma to score the winner with 8 minutes remaining.
That's given away by Blackburn. They've got a man committed upfield now, and here's Adam Smith leading the charge. Danjuma left corner of the penalty area. Arnaud Danjuma in the box, onto his right foot. Oh, magnificent finish! Arnaud Danjuma, that might be the winner. A fantastic strike from the Cherries pre-season in-form man, and the Dutchman has his first competitive Bournemouth goal and they're back in front for the third time. 3-2.
Phew. Jason Tindall off to a winning start then. Sam, did he do much different to Eddie Howe in terms of how he set the team up?
Yeah, well, the 3-4-3 is not something they did with great regularity last season, so a bit of a change in the system. Still, I thought that actually at times at the back end of last season they went quite direct for certain games, obviously because the predicament they were in. So it was very much back to playing out, certainly in the first half. They got caught out on a few occasions, but I thought the intensity, the way they shifted the ball forward in the second half was a lot more aggressive and they looked a lot better. And I was pleased to see the likes of Danjuma and Stacey get off with the goals, because they're the type of players I think will really prosper in the Championship this year. Some of the guys that haven't had the regular game time in the Premier League or not experience in the Premier League. So I thought they just about deserved it. That said, it was defensive deficiencies on both sides. I think Blackburn are desperate in that regard. They need probably two centre-halves and probably a left-back as well. So that's where the managers will be focusing, Jason Tindall included in that. They need to be better defensively. The young goalkeeper's obviously made a really bad mistake. So I would suggest moving forward, they'll probably be in for a goalkeeper as well as, I would say, another striker and maybe a wide player. But in terms of a first day of a season, for a rookie manager, he'll be relieved and absolutely thrilled that they've won their first game.
Yeah, Robin, I feel like of all the new managers in the Championship this season, it was almost the most important that Tindall got off to a good start, because otherwise you start to open yourself up to accusations of, well, meet the new guy, same as the old guy kind of thing.
Absolutely, yeah. But, I mean, there's quite a few assistants that are stepping up this season, aren't there? So, big afternoon for him. I want to ask you, Matt, actually, because you seem to have Bournemouth's number. What's going to happen to them this season? We should be asking you, shouldn't we?
I'm not making any more predictions.
They're going to be fun, aren't they, this season, I think. You know, they've gone back to their attacking ways. I did a lot of them last season for Match of the Day in the Premier League, and Sam's absolutely right. They went a bit more direct, and they tried to stop. They went more defensive, and it didn't work. It just didn't work at all. There were times where they barely had a shot on goal. So I think he's obviously trying to get back to where they were, which is this kind of swashbuckling attacking team. And if you look at the starting lineup, I mean, these players were signed for the Premier League. So if they can keep hold of most of them, I think the only one, maybe, not sure about David Brooks, I'm not sure if he'll still be there, but you've got the likes of Mepham, Lloyd Kelly, Lewis Cook, Dominic Solanke. You know, that is an excellent Championship team he's got there.
Clarkey, we took some stick last week for not mentioning Blackburn on our season preview. What kind of campaign do you think that Mo Brinko are in store for?
Yeah, I think Sam's hit the nail on the head. They need better defenders. And if they get that platform, then they can challenge in the top half of the table. No doubt about it, because you've got one of the division's best forward players in Adam Armstrong. He scored a lovely goal, didn't he? On the turn, receiving it and swivelling, knocking it into the corner. I like Nyambe at right back. He produced the assist there. Now, look, I don't think anyone's got Blackburn as playoff certainties, have they? But I don't see them as being relegation fodder either. I think you're probably looking at mid-table for them. But yeah, they certainly need to shore up at the back. Both teams were a bit rusty. I like the look of Bournemouth's back three at Championship level. Steve Cook, Kelly and Mepham, when they're all fully fit and up to speed, I think that's a pretty good unit.
Cardiff 0, Sheffield Wednesday 2, the battle of the winged creatures, the owls besting the bluebirds. Producer Abby asking if the bluebird is a real animal, which I thought was quite extraordinary for somebody of her intelligence level. But this is for you, Abby. Bluebirds are a group of medium-sized, mostly insectivorous or omnivorous birds in the order of passerines in the genus Cyalia of the thrush family, brackets Turdidae, close brackets. Speaking of Turdidae, lots of talk of hangovers this season for teams. And Cardiff, Robin, really weren't at it here. They reaching for the resolve, just trying to shake off the effects of that failed playoff campaign.
Well, Neil Harris, I think he was asked about that after the game, and he didn't really say, I understand the question, but I don't think that's the case. I think, I don't know, sometimes it feels a bit lazy saying that there's a hangover, but I'm not sure. I think it is in this case. You know, they were excellent at the back end of last season, and I think the disappointment for that. I mean, I guess this is one for Adrian or Sam. I was just wondering, in terms of the psychology of these two teams, Cardiff coming off the back of losing that semi-final, and then Sheffield Wednesday have this points deduction. So I just feel like maybe there's, I don't know, a bit more focus for Sheffield Wednesday, as opposed to Cardiff going, oh, you know, another slog of a season, perhaps. I'm not sure.
I think a few weeks down the line, this game could have had a different outcome. I think having been there in a dressing room when you've got that points penalty, you've got a real spring in your step the first few games. But then when you have the kind of midweekers and you have a big amount of games in the first few weeks of the season and you don't get maximum points and you're still 3 or 4 points minus 3 or 4, it can become pretty tough. I mean, at Luton Town, we were minus 30 and we weren't into positive points until Christmas, I think. So this is different, but I think it can be tough mentally. So I think they'll have a spring in their step for a couple of weeks, but if they get a couple of defeats, this is going to be a tough challenge. And you know, the other side of it for Cardiff, I think they'll be absolutely fine, but might take them a few weeks to get going and get over those scars.
Yeah, they've also got the off-field issues, haven't they, with Mendes Lang having his contract cancelled. I think that's obviously is something that's been bubbling away behind the scenes, and that's not easy. We don't know the circumstances, can't comment on it, but it won't be easy for the dressing room, because I'm sure that he's got good pals in there that will be sad to see him leave so suddenly. So yeah, issues for Harris to deal with, but yeah, over the remaining 45 games, I think Cardiff will probably still be above, well, they'll certainly be above Sheffield Wednesday.
Any other Championship games anyone wants to talk about? Sam, QPR beating Forest? No, let's move on from that then. Any others?
Norwich were good. They weren't brilliant, but they did a really professional job. And I think it's important for them. They lost so many games. Clearly, they lost every game, didn't they, post-lockdown? It was disastrous. So I think it was really important for them to get that clean sheet and to grind out a decent win with a sub, Idar coming off the bench to score the winner. So yeah, I think Daniel Farker will be a very relieved man, and I would expect Norwich to kick on now.
Oh, well done. You didn't make the happy Farker joke. Let's leave the base humour to me. Okay, let's get into League One next.
Everyone remembers that time you've had that peach of an accumulator looking good only for, oh, and the keeper's let it slip through his legs in the 94th minute. Or the right back has to pull on the gloves and face a penalty. Or Man United have again conceded a late equaliser. But with Paddy Power's Acca Cracker, you get a free bet if one leg of your fourfold plus Acca lets you down on all football matches and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10. Minimum odds of 1-5 on each leg. Online exclusive. Exclude shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, smart speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic. This is the Totally Football League Show with Matt Davis-Adams.
Into League One, where the headlines read, Sunderland get a 1-1 draw. Is this from last season's script? No, broken record. Welland's men were well in the points as Swindon beat Rochdale 3-1. There were wins for newly promoted Plymouth 2, but Northampton drew with Wimbledon, whilst Charlton bested Crew. The first game that I'm going to talk about, though, is Gillingham 0, Hull City 2. Keane Lewis Potter and Josh McGuinness with the goals. Robin, we were down on Hull after the restart because they plummeted their way into League One. So this is something of a surprise?
A huge surprise for me. It was absolutely shocking after the restart, wasn't it? And I was actually quite surprised that Grant McCann is still the manager. I'm not sure if it was questioned a lot, because I just think the form they went on after that, you'd have huge question marks, and it just doesn't seem very usual. It's a great start for him. And I just wonder maybe if it's a bit of complacency from the higher ups, maybe, that he's still there, without sounding too harsh on him. But, you know, not an easy game, Gillingham away to start with in League One. And they absolutely bossed it, didn't they? I think the Gills had one shot on target, and that came in after about 5 minutes. So, yeah, great start for him. Exactly what he and Hull City needed.
Yeah, easy to read too much into the first game of the season, Sam, but that's exactly what I'm going to do. It felt like this is a massive 3 points for Hull, given what we'd seen from them last season.
Yeah, I think it would have surprised a few people up and down the country. I think Robin's bang on, really. I was surprised that Grant McCann kept his job, pleased that he did, and was given an opportunity to get them going, because, you know, he was hung out to dry at the back end of last season with the departures at that club. You know, we all knew what was going to transpire. Just because you've got the points on the board, if you let your best players go, that can quickly spiral into trouble. And it did. I think they lost 16 out of the last 20 games. And coming up against the Gillingham team, which I didn't realise until I was looking through last season's results at the weekend, they lost one in the last 17. I knew they finished strong, but that's incredible. So going there was a really difficult game, but Gillingham are one of those teams that have been really affected by the recent goings on. They've lost a number of players, so they're a little bit in transition at the moment. And they bossed it. Oh yeah, really like the look of the midfield. Two very inexperienced centre-halves. Gillingham have got Magoma, 22 years old, and Zach Medley, who's on loan from Arsenal, I believe was at Chelsea's academy before. So I've seen a little bit of him, and that was a little bit of a rude awakening for them. But yeah, a really good performance. And when you look at that 11 of Hull City, if they can have one or two additions, they should be just fine. I'm not going to tip them for promotion, but certainly going to be in the top half and potentially challenging if they could get a bit more quality.
Yeah, speaking of additions, reports this morning that Exeter's Randall Williams is heading Hull's way with a fee having been accepted. Accrington 2, Peterborough 0. One of the bookies' favourites were Posh, falling at the first hurdle here to relegation favourites Stanley after goals from Dion Charles and Tarik Owakwe.
They're giving a Luke Davy to Tarik Owakwe today. Loan from Chelsea. A hat-trick on his debut against Leeds midweek in the AFL Trophy. And here he is. Owakwe, oh, what a finish! Superb again from Stanley. Two absolute pearlers this afternoon at the Wham Stadium.
Sam, tell us a bit about Tarik Owakwe. You and I have watched him for Chelsea. He's had quite the first week in senior football.
Yeah, I was thinking he would just be feeling amazing Saturday night when you're actually out there playing in the first team. I know there's no supporters, but so different from academy football, and he'll be just ecstatic at the way it's gone the first week. And what a goal. I text you, I think, at the weekend. I've not seen him strike a ball with his right foot, let alone do that. Much more left-footed player. He's playing wide for Stanley. We've seen him play centrally, probably seen him play at left-back as well. Can go beyond people, carries the ball nicely forward. So, you know, he's not one of the first names that would come out of the mouth when you're talking about academy prospects, but it just shows you the quality these top clubs have got when he's gone there and got four goals in League One already. So certainly a great signing for John Coleman.
Yeah, got himself a hat-trick against Leeds in the trophy last week too. Adrian, as for Peterborough, they were not happy at how last season ended. They won't be happy at how this one started either. And Johnson Clark-Harris maybe going to take a while to become the new Ivan Toney?
It might take him a while, but I think playing for Peterborough, he'll get plenty of chances. They had 19 efforts in this game, and we know how difficult it is to play away to Accrington Stanley. They were beaten by two great goals, two worldies, weren't they? Dion Charles on the volley. I mean, that was an absolute cracker. So I don't think Peterborough should beat themselves up too much. They'll score plenty of goals this season. They were missing, of course, two players, Reece Brown and Siriki Dembele, who tested positive for COVID. So, and they're two very key players, particularly Dembele, who I think will form a great partnership with Johnson Clark-Harris. Moisa, not quite as effective by all accounts at the weekend. So no, it's one of those, bit of a shock to the system, but they'll come again, Peterborough, no doubt about it.
Do you think, Robin, that they might do a bit more business before the window ends?
I can see it happening, yeah, absolutely, especially after this result. I mean, not that we should go over the top, but I didn't quite get it in my 15 seconds, but I didn't realise that Darren McAntony had called this Project Vengeance after what happened last season. And I just think that's kind of putting a bit of a target on the old back there. So
it's a bit Steve Evans, that, isn't it?
It is, isn't it?
Yeah, it's odd those two didn't actually get on that well, isn't it? Let's move on to Lincoln 2, Oxford 0. You can't see this, listener, but on our video call, Sam is grinning like a Cheshire cat and Robin, not so much. Is this that word again, Robin, hangover? There's such a tight turnaround between last season and this. Is it going to take a while to shake off last season's disappointment?
I think yes, although Oxford started really well with a penalty shootout win in the Carabao Cup and then beat Chelsea's under-21s in the EFL Trophy. And they were two different teams and they were both pretty good performances. So it was really disappointing on Saturday, especially coming up against the ex, who, Michael Appleton afterwards, it kind of made it even worse. They did a job on Oxford United, Lincoln. They scored very early on, sat back, and then got another goal from a set piece. And then afterwards, Michael Appleton said to the press, "Oh, it's all right, Oxford United, they'll be up there. Don't you worry about that." And I'm like, "Yeah, thanks for that little pat on the head, Michael." it was not a good afternoon all round. And I think more than the scoreline is the injury to Josh Ruppels, only left back at Oxford United, and also Rob Atkinson, who was sent off for a really weird straight red. He was already on a yellow, and then it was probably another yellow card, but it certainly wasn't a straight red. It was very odd. So I think the kind of damage is more that sort of thing. Really, really disappointing start for Oxford United. Do you know what? I am going to take the hangover excuse. Thanks, Matt.
What about Lincoln then Clarkie? What can we expect from them this season?
Well, pretty good recruitment, I've got to say, during the summer. The goalkeeper is an interesting one, Alex Palmer, Iloni from West Brom. And he, of course, was at Plymouth between the sticks for them last year. And I think I put him in my League Two team of the year. He was excellent for them, and he had a really strong start for the Imps. So no, I think they'll be strong. Good in wide areas. They always have been, well, in recent seasons, Lincoln anyway. Harry Anderson's cross for the first goal was one of the best you could wish to see. So now I think Lincoln can look up this season. I'm not saying that they're going to make the playoffs, but I certainly think they'll be knocking on the door for the playoffs this time around. No matter what Appleton says, he came on this show but played everything down, didn't he? I think that's just his way. He's got the kind of players that will suit his style of football now. And this was a very efficient performance, as Robin outlined. 38% possession, but they were much more dangerous when they had the ball. They were more progressive, and they sliced open Oxford on numerous occasions.
Sam, before we leave League One, I think we ought to let you have a word on Swindon and a successful start to them. And I'm not going to use the Smiths pun. Just talk about them winning the game instead.
Robin, I'm only smiling, by the way, because my dad's from Lincoln, so he would have been thrilled with a glass of red when he was watching Jeff and the boys and girls on Saturday afternoon, watching those goals going. Swindon, a little bit overshadowed, I will say, first, Matt, by the departure of Michael Doughty. So if I can just say what a brilliant lad he is and what an outstanding player he's been for Swindon. So I wanted to wish him well. I'm sure I'll send him a text later on, but really sad to see that he's had his contract ripped up. So that's a big blow for personal reasons. So yeah, just wanted to wish him well. And I think that kind of took the wind out of the supporters' sails a little bit on Saturday night, because he's probably been their best player the last few years. But yeah, in terms of the game, Tyler Smith, great to see him get off with a goal. And obviously Rochdale like to play football, and we know at times how aggressive Richie Wellens' team can be in terms of pressing. And we saw that with the third goal that Rochdale conceded. Matt Smith went and won it really high and scored the goal with the goalkeeper in no man's land. But yeah, I think they're going to need a few additions. They're a bit patched up defensively, but like I said, probably on the preview show, I don't have any concerns about Plymouth, Swindon or Crewe. And having seen how they all performed this week, even Crewe in defeat against Charlton, comfortably be away from the relegation zone, in my opinion. And if Swindon can get the right players, maybe a push for the playoffs, but consolidation would be fine by me.
All right, that's a nice way to round off League One. Final stop for us today, League Two. We'll be there in a jiffy.
This is the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Into League Two then, these are the headlines. Simon Weaver's Harrogate Town made a mockery of Mark Molesley's men as the EFL's new boys battered the Shrimpers of Southend. League favourites Bolton forced to eat humble if vegan pie by Hector Bellerin's Forest Green. And Cheltenham may need to bring down their good luck in the playoffs banner after they lost to Morecambe. More Shrimpers. What a start then for Harrogate, putting four past Southend at Roots Hall. Two teams starting this season as they finished last. The word momentum banded around a lot in football, but seems appropriate here. Sam, Harrogate with all the oomph and Southend still in freefall.
Well, it's just the perfect game for Harrogate to get used to the EFL, although it's probably not a great example of what they're going to face in the weeks ahead. But yeah, just the perfect game, playing against a really inexperienced side. And I thought a nervy first 5-10 minutes to be expected, but then it could have been really worse for Southend. They missed a number of other opportunities, and the only real experience that Southend have got, they were all missing. They're missing White and Dimitriou and Dieng. So they had to just play, you know, all the kids. So it's a fantastic result from Harrogate, and they would have enjoyed that journey back north at the weekend, no doubt. And I read this morning, I haven't got the chap to credit, but it's the biggest win for a side playing their first ever Football League game since Stalybridge Celtic beat Chesterfield 6-0 in August 1921. So, oh, wow. Thank you.
Clarkey outstatted. We'll come to you in a moment, Adrian, so try and steel yourself to talk about Southend. With Harrogate, Robin, again, I know it's only one game, but I wonder if this is another example that maybe the gap between the National League and League Two, certainly at the top end of the National League, actually isn't that big.
I think I do agree with you generally with that point, but I think, as Sam said in mitigation, this Southend side, it was basically an under-23s side, wasn't it? I think a lot of them were making kind of senior debuts. And so I think it's difficult to draw any hard conclusions from this. But I think it's just interesting the contrast between the two clubs, really, at the moment. Mark Moseley's, obviously, that's his first EFL job as well, having joined from Weymouth. Simon Weaver, who's now weirdly the longest-serving manager in the EFL after one game. But it just shows that the contrast between how the two clubs have been run recently. Harrogate on the up, they've just backed him but done it in a good way. And yeah, I think they are going in opposite directions at the moment anyway, but I'll let Adrian be the doom and gloom.
Yeah, Totally Football League Show bingo cards at the ready as I ask Adrian, what's going wrong with Southend United?
Well, they've got to sort their financial situation out. It's been going on for way too long now. This ongoing dispute with HMRC, I think they're back in court this week. It means that they're under a transfer embargo. So, and they're having to get rid of so many players as well. Their best players are leaving. Luckily, Southend have got a terrific academy. They've been able to bring through really good young players for a number of seasons now. But there's only so long you can go to the well with that. And you don't want to be putting an entire 11 of academy kids into a starting 11, not in League Two, not against, you know, strong teams. And you're going to come up against loads of those in that division. So it's, they've got to sort the financial situation out first. Mark Moseley can't work miracles. He's not a magician. On the stats thing, I've been through every matchday squad in Southend's history since the weekend, and I've worked out...
What? Sorry, you've been...
Yeah, and I've worked out that it's the youngest...
Good weekend, was it?
It's the youngest squad in 114 years of Southend United's history. So there you go. Yeah, I've been through every single matchday group and...
Sorry, I need to know how you've done that. There must be a website.
No, just
did you go to the National Archives or
you've
something?
You've averaged out every starting lineup.
No, I just nicked a stat off someone else. But yeah, I just read it in the Southend Evening Echo, but I had you going for a moment there. But Southend have got some good young players, but they desperately need experience to give this rookie guy, Mark Moseley, a chance. If this squad is what he's got to play with for this season, I fear for Southend United's future as an EFL club, and it's that serious. And you know what? The way it's going, you also fear, will they make the season? Because if you're looking around at clubs that are really struggling, and Southend are pretty high on that list at the moment financially.
Clarkey, can I put you on the spot here?
Go on.
Do they need a new owner, Southend?
Well, I think they need new investment. I think that the chairman is, by and large, who is pretty much the owner. Martin, he's done a pretty good job over the years, I have to say. And Southend have had a lot of successful teams. But I just don't know if he's got the finances to take the club forward. I think he needs to bring in a shareholder, somebody with some financial muscle that can get Southend out of this hole. I wouldn't necessarily say he has to go, but they need new money from somewhere.
One team who do have new money are Bolton Wanderers, but they lost 1-0 at home to Forest Green Rovers at the weekend. Robin, it's a lot to ask for a new manager and basically an entirely new team to gel immediately. And lo and behold, they didn't do that on Saturday.
Oh, a huge ask. I really don't understand how so many bookies have Bolton as the favourites for the title. They're not set up for that at all, considering what's going on. Apart from, obviously, no points deduction this time, which is great. Be great for the players to kind of have a fresh coming into the new season without that on their minds. But, you know, and also Ian Evatt, you know, he did a fantastic job at Barrow, but it took him a while to get his stamp his philosophy on Barrow that made them be dubbed Barrow Salona. So I think just reading some of the comments from Bolton fans, he's obviously trying to start to do that with a bit more possession-based, but... It's going to take time. It's going to take time. And I think, yeah, this season, I mean, if they can maybe sneak into the playoffs, but I wouldn't think it would be any more than that.
Football's a team game, isn't it, Robin? And he had 10 debutants, and that team had never played together. So you can always put, if you put 11 players together that have been together for a while up against 11 superior players that have never started the same match together, it's an absolute leveller. So, yeah, we're not going to see the real Bolton, I don't think, for a month or two.
Yeah, Bolton could be forgiven for going to the pub, having a pint and waiting for all this to blow over after Carl Winchester's winner. In terms of Forest Green Rovers, Sam, Mark Cooper, not universally popular, I think it's fair to say, amongst Rovers supporters, and maybe even under a little bit of pressure. His contract comes to an end at the end of this season, so this a more than decent start for him.
Yeah, brilliant start. Really poor towards the back end of last season. Some dreadful results in the running, but he's been backed because they've made some brilliant signings through the spine of the team. I've seen quite a bit of Dan Sweeney at Barnet previously. He played in midfield. He can play centre-half as well. That midfield with Ebo Adams and Winchester is particularly strong. And then you look at Jamil Matt, not a out-and-out goal scorer, but a great centre-forward in the same mould of Christian Deutsch, who did such great things for them for a couple of years. And defensively, Moore Taylor, player that I played with, very good as well. And obviously, the right wing back, Kane Wilson, kept Hector Bellerin out the side at the weekend. So that was good for him. Not sure how he did, but that's a really good start in 11. Obviously, as Robin said, you're going to expect under Ian Everett Bolton to have more possession. I think they did in the first half. It got a bit desperate in the second half, and some of their marquee signings, if you like, have not got up to speed yet. So Forest Green probably caught Bolton at the right time for the reasons that the other two have just discussed. I think they'll be fine. And ultimately, for Bolton, as we saw last year with Richie Wellens and Owen Doyle, a lot of it is about getting the best out of him. If they can create him chances, he will get a bag full. But I wouldn't be surprised if Forest Green do maybe accumulate slightly more points than Bolton this season.
All right, just about out of time for this week. Before we go, you might have seen that Morecambe paid for a plane to fly over Barrow's Holker Street Stadium with the message, "Welcome back to the EFL from Morecambe FC." It begs the question, when have our panel feigned footballing magnanimity in order to make themselves look good? Adrian, I'll start with you.
Well, my dad's a Spurs fan, so he had to sort of accept that I was going to play for the other side of North London. He took it well. But so yeah, I was pretty magnanimous a few years ago, just before it got demolished. I bought tickets for a Legends Stadium tour of White Hart Lane. So I went around and put some money in the Spurs coffers and spent a couple of hours pretending to care and show interest and to not laugh at their sparse trophy cabinet. So yeah, I did my bit. I was quite proud of myself there. It was Martin Chivers. It was a lovely, lovely fella. But yeah, it was a couple of hours I'll never get back.
How about you, Robin? You hosted a charity event at the County Ground.
I'm not really allowed around that facility, to be honest, Matt. I couldn't really think of anything magnanimous. I don't know what that says about me. What I will say is, it's nice to see a plane with a positive message for once, isn't it, in football?
Yeah, absolutely. How about you, Sam? You played for 10 EFL clubs. You must have done something nice for one of their rivals at one point in your life.
Well, I was going to go for actual rivals in my team. I'll come on to that. Same topic as Adrian. I scored all those goals for Chelsea youth team and reserves, despite being a QPR fan. So that was really nice of me, early part of my career. But I would say always being mates with my competitors in the team, the centre forwards. Late on, Stephen Thompson was a big mate of mine in Scotland. But probably the one that stands out was Alan Lee, who came to Ipswich to essentially replace me when I was injured or trying to fight back to get in the team. And me and him were off in his little smart Porsche up the Suffolk coast for cream teas most day after training. So I was the one who welcomed him into the club and made sure that we had somewhere to frequent on a Saturday night after a game. So yeah.
There you go. People think that footballers have an easy life, but they don't know about the struggles of having to get into the Porsche and drive off for a cream tea.
It was Alan Lee's Porsche. Alan Lee's Porsche, not mine.
Very good. Don't forget to join Ali and George for the Totally Football League show Extra Time on Thursday. They'll have a bit of EFL Cup action to look back on and the fixtures to look ahead to this weekend too. We'll be back next Monday. Until then, thank you, Robin. Been good to have you on again. Hopefully we'll do again soon.
Thank you, Matt.
Adrian, have a lovely week.
Yep, cheers, guys.
And Sam, we'll catch up same time next week.
Cheers, Matt.
Do check out our Twitter poll on the Paddy Power performance of the weekend and vote on that, please. We'll catch up with you again same time, same place next week.
You've been listening to the Totally Football League Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and following at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all the Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football League Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
Muddy Knees Media.
Yes, that music means one thing and one thing only. The Offside Rule WSL edition is back.
Woohoo! And the WSL is bigger and better than ever before.
Which means we need to do the same.
And that's why we've got interviews with the biggest names.
The brightest minds in the game.
As well as all the in-depth match analysis you've come to know and love.
Just search for the Offside Rule WSL edition, available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or you can find us ad-free on the Athletic app. That's the Offside Rule WSL edition, out every Tuesday.